Welcome to episode 32 of the Band of Gamers podcast. My name is Greylock3491. Yes, I'm back. And this week I'm joined by Osiris Prime.
Hello, everybody.
And Zeus Adamus.
Hey.
Well, guys, it's great to be back on the show. Thank you for holding down the fort last week, and great show, by the way. This week, let's talk about what we've been playing, and let's start with Prime first. Prime, tell us, what have you been playing lately?
So I played a few more things, actually, than I have the last few weeks, or actually even a month. So start off just kind of with the family gaming part. We did a little Mario Maker and Lego Marvel Super Heroes. And then there was another game that came out this past week on the Xbox One called Roblox. I think it's been on the PC for a year or two or so, somewhere like that, somewhere around there. It's kind of hard to explain, I guess. It's just a bunch of user-generated games, kind of mini-games, I guess, and for the most part. And I haven't really tried all of them or that's on there right now. I was kind of flipping back and forth, actually, between the PC version and the Xbox One, and it looks like the PC version, there's a lot more content that you can go through than on the Xbox One. I don't see, at least not that I saw, that you can actually create anything yet on the Xbox One side, but I know on the PC side you can go in there and there's like an editor or like game creator or whatever they call it, that you can, you know, make your own games. So I was just kind of going through there, just kind of going through at least the smaller kind of goofier games that me and my son were playing. For example, there's one where it's a bird simulator where you're just kind of just flying around this little kind of foresty area. There's some water and stuff, rocks and all this, you know, here and there. It's nothing like drastic or major. It's just, you know, you have a little health and water like bar or little indicator that you got to fill up every once in a while. If it gets too low, you die, obviously. But otherwise, you know, it's just kind of flying around, just being a bird, I guess. So that was kind of, you know, just simple and relaxing, I guess. I've kind of jumped onto that a few times. And then there was one where it's like natural disasters where you're dumped into this little play area and either something like a tornado or a blizzard, you know, something happens where it's major and you got to, depending on what it is, you got to kind of outrun it or hide from it or, you know, just keep yourself safe and just kind of, you know, last man standing kind of a thing. So just kind of goofy things like that. And then I did pick up a new game actually just a few days ago, Lego Marvel Avengers, to go with my Lego Marvel Super Heroes. So I just started on that. I only played like the first, I guess if you want to call it the first mission or level. But, you know, it's Lego, a Lego game, so that's cool. You know, I can, I think there's like an open world aspect to this, just like in the Lego Marvel Super Heroes after a certain point. So I want to try to get to that point so I can, you know, play with my son a little bit so he can just kind of screw around in the city. And then the only other thing I've been playing is Ark Survival Evolved, which I mentioned last week. Just pretty much jumping into that pretty much every day during the weekend. Playing a few hours, just trying to build up my base and kind of protect it and try to tame and, you know, tame some dinosaurs so I can ride them around and, you know, kind of help me out. So, but other than that, that's pretty much it. So, Gray, how about you? What you've been playing lately? Or if you have any comments on anything I've been playing?
Yeah, I'd like to know on Roblox, right? How much is that game? It's not a $60 game, is it?
No, it's free. It's free to download, and then all the games are free. There is some microtransactions that you can buy, I forget what they're called, but like the dollar amount of whatever the in-game currency is, and then you could just buy like cosmetic stuff or I forgot what else. There's some other things. I didn't really look into it too much because I usually just jump into the games that people are playing or are creating.
Now, do you know if the co-op, it sounds like you're playing co-op with your son. Is it only two-player or is it three-player? Did you have any indication of how many people you get in there?
Actually, the couple of games we played were only single player, so I don't know if there's actually any co-op, you know, at all. So I'm not really sure on that point. Like I said, the bird one was, I was just kind of fooling around in it, and he saw me. He was like, "Oh, I want to play that," so I just gave him the controller, and I was doing some other things. And then the same thing for that natural disaster one. He was just kind of playing it as I was doing other things. So I'm not sure if there's any regular co-op or not.
Oh, I was kind of hoping it had maybe the co-op like the Minecraft. I love the, you know, I can put Minecraft in and play with my two grandkids, and it's a lot of fun. So Always looking for something like that. So what do you think of, another week has gone by, what are you thinking of Ark Survival Evolved?
I'm still loving it. like I said on the last podcast, that's pretty much what I've been playing for the last, I'd say about 2 months now, actually, since February now. I think it came out like the beginning of December, so I've pretty much just playing it all through December and into January. So it's really fun. It's kind of hard if you don't have like the wiki up or some kind of guide that you can look at, because it's doesn't really. There's no handheld holding, excuse me, at all on it. It just pretty much you throw it in there and you got to kind of figure things out. So, but yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
That's cool. Well, I got for the holidays, for Christmas, I got Fallout 4 as one of my games, and I threw it in a couple weeks ago, and I really got sucked into it, and I was surprised. But man, I got sucked in really bad. Now, I've noticed some of my friends, they're level 40, 42, whatever. Yeah, I think I'm level like 2, but I did play for a couple hours straight through, and man, I'll tell you, it sucks you in. The story is great, and I can see it being like Skyrim, where I'll never play the 500 hours like some of my friends play, but I can definitely see getting in 100 or 200 hours into it, just picking it up and playing. So love the dog, just like in Fable, just having a little dog, a companion, is awesome, and I get sucked into that. Look forward to getting back into it when as things slow down. I then another thing I got for Christmas was Madden 16. So I had been a very avid football player back when I really got hooked with 2K, well, just 2K, 2K on the Dreamcast. That's when I got really hooked. I had played Madden. I have Maddens going all the way back to the 90s, but 2K hooked me. That's when I First time I can remember playing an entire season. As a matter of fact, I was so hooked on 2K, I actually recorded it when I went to the Super Bowl with the Patriots. I recorded the entire game on VHS. That's how into it I was. And I kind of fell away. I think I have Madden 07, 09, 11, and I kind of fell away from it because there wasn't so much changing. I mean, it wasn't really changing that much from year to year. So I threw in Madden 16, and I'll tell you what, I almost took the disc out and broke it. I mean, I just want to play a season. And it was having me play the Super Bowl as two teams that are not in the Super Bowl, that were not going to be in the Super Bowl, and who I don't like. And so it took me a while to cancel out of that. And then it had me downloading. Do you want to download this? Do you want to download? It's like, why are you. Just do an update before I launch the game. Don't ask me 20 different questions on downloading. And then for the life of me, I couldn't like play. I was like, I wanted to play, and then it was like letting somebody else run the kickoff. And I'm like, what's going on here? I eventually figured it all out. Really got me upset. I couldn't even get my coach, not Bill Parcells. I couldn't even get my coach, Bill Belichick, in the game. I later found out he's the only coach that's not in the game because he's not part of the union. But it was frustrating. Really, really frustrating. But after I calmed down and spent half an hour on the internet, after a week, I let a week go by, and then I got back into it and I had a lot of fun. But I kind of felt like, something's missing. This is Madden 16. What is missing? And I'm like, the graphics look good, but players are walking into each other. There's kind of like these blocky robotic movements every once in a while. I'm like, what's going on with this? So I threw back in, after I finished playing my first preseason game of Madden 16, I threw back in what I consider the best football game of all time, ESPN 2K5. Now I know a lot of people don't think that's the best game of all time, and graphically it is way behind, like 16 years behind what we have today. However, the presentation, I was telling my wife, I'm like, this game is just phenomenal. You'll be playing, and they'll cut to the stadium, and you'll see fans dressed up in like fan outfits, like for their respective team wherever you are, and they'll be like rooting and cheering on their team, and some of the guys will have actual jerseys of their favorite team members, and they'll have hats or face paint, and there's a guy walking down selling chips, and he'll throw a bag of chips to a guy in the stands every once in a while, and I'm like, they'll cut over to the cheerleaders doing their cheering, or they'll cut to a player who's injured on the field, and coaches will actually run out to the player who's injured on the field, and the player will be like, "Oh, it hurts right here. Do you think I can keep playing?" I mean, this game, presentation, hands down, best football game ever. And, I know 2K8 is a great game too, but I don't know. I don't know. Madden 16, I do plan on enjoying playing more and going through the entire season and winning the Super Bowl as the Patriots should have. But there's just something missing, man. I don't know. I mean, there seems to be more finesse in the 2005 version of 2K5 after the play and the presentation you see after the play, just from the players and how they act on the field and how they respond to either catching or dropping the ball or, getting a first down or not getting a first down in that 16-year-old game than there is in this game that came out just a few months ago. So, I don't know, very, very interesting stuff. I also had a I had a rant over at the gamer site where I had an issue with buying a game and trying to get my free games. I'm a Xbox Live Gold subscriber, and as part of that subscription, I get free games every month. And they wanted me to put a credit card in to get my free game, so I ranted about that over at thegamersite.com. And the rounded up, I played some Taken King last night with my buddy Mace. I just don't want to do patrols and strikes anymore. I mean, I'm like, Mace, why don't we go through the Taken King story missions, which are very interesting and very fun with my other character, because what else is there to do? We did the daily, and now what? We're going to patrol? I patrolled for over a year. I'm done patrolling. I'm sorry. Those little flashlights on the ground, somebody else can pick them up and chase after them. I'm just done. And strikes, you got rid of all the good strikes. Yeah, no, yeah. So that's my jaded month of gaming. Zeus, are you back? What have you been playing?
Yeah, I am. And before I go to my list, hey, Gray, I wanted to ask you. So you mentioned playing NFL 2K on the Dreamcast. Did you ever play a four player?
Attempted to, but then I'm like, I couldn't get three of my kids to play and be interested for more than 5 minutes. So not really.
Yeah, those are some fond memories for me. I was in school, in a military school, a military training school at the time, and significantly more free time than I usually had when I was at an operational command. And I had two buddies there with me, and we would just go over to my buddy's house, and I'd bring my controller, and three of us would play. It wasn't four player, but it was just so awesome that you could put two players. Two, human players on the same team, and one could be the quarterback, and another buddy could like be the wide receiver. So those were just some really fond memories.
Did you ever play Choo Choo Rocket? That is so addictive.
No, my big Dreamcast games were that NFL 2K and Soul Calibur, because the matches were so fast and gorgeous to just watch. Again, with three players in rotation, that was one of the few fighting games that it was just as much fun sitting there and watching two players fight it out as it was to actually, have a controller in your hand.
Yeah, that was one of the highest rated games ever made for consoles, the Soul Calibur for the Dreamcast. And my kids and I, we had just a blast playing it. And Soul Calibur 2, I believe, was one of the first high definition video games on the original Xbox. I have to check fact check that. But a lot of people don't realize you could get component cables for your original Xbox and play a certain few games in high def, which is pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that too. And then I wanted to ask you about the Xbox 360 games for Gold. Have you noticed on your Xbox One that I haven't had to, well, unless I queued them up separately, are they auto-populating in your games available list? Like, I turned my Xbox One after a long time not having it on, and there were just like six or eight like Xbox 360 games, and I don't remember going to a PC and queuing those for download. Are they just auto-stuffing those if you're a Gold subscriber?
Yeah, what they're doing is this. Anything that you have purchased through the arcade or basically any digital content you own from the 360 that is backward compatible will automatically show up as being available to install on your Xbox One. Now, it shouldn't, my understanding is it shouldn't auto-install. I don't know if there's a setting that allow it to do that, but they should
No,
show as
mine's.
ready to install.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're not already installed. They're just over there in that right hand. Kind of looks like a snap window, but it's not. But they're in that right hand pane of, like you said, games that you own and have access to, but you don't have installed, and you just hit your A button and they start downloading. So that's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. That is very awesome. I have like one of them I have is Sonic 2, and it's like what a great game. No, all your digital content, anything you bought digitally is going to automatically show up there ready for you to download, and then the other ones that you have on disk, you have to throw the disk in first. But yeah, it's very cool. So over time I expect that, ready to install list to grow and grow as they have more digital content available for backwards compatibility.
Yeah, it makes an interesting discussion in terms of the competition between the Xbox One and PS4, and I dropped a news story in the feed for later about their sales numbers from two different aspects. One thing that's becoming prevalent now is people are kind of grading games with Gold versus PlayStation Plus based on the frequency of retail games that show up for free. And I didn't realize it, but I guess that's what I've been grading it on as well, just kind of subconsciously. It's, the arcade game showing up is cool, but what's really awesome is when a game shows up that was, sold in a box, at GameStop or whatever. And what an amazing thing that Microsoft did when they went for backwards compatibility, because what it means is they just have a ginormous library of those retail games that people remember and people probably still want to play, that they can just incrementally drop in. And so in those months where there's like an Xbox 360 retail game in the mix, and you go over at PlayStation Plus and you look at two, downloadable only games or indie games, the value definitely is lopsided, in Microsoft's favor, I think.
Yeah, that's cool because for the longest time, the PlayStation Plus was so destroying Xbox Live with all those free games. So the fact that Microsoft is stepping up and actually trying to make it a value is awesome in my eyes.
Yeah, so my list will probably be pretty quick. The only thing that I've played that I can remember in recent history is I've been playing. Hold on a sec. I just created a major problem on my PC. Sorry, just one second.
No, no problem at all. Prime, what are your thoughts? Any thoughts on what we were just talking about?
Yeah, it's kind of cool how. I guess if you want to say they're kind of supplementing maybe their games with Gold with the 360 library, so that's cool. It's pretty nice when you see those games coming over. And like I said, yeah, you definitely there is no instant install for those 360 games, so you have to go over there to the game section on your one and install them. So it's kind of nice. And they've had some pretty decent games. They had I think last month was the last one. The second half of the month was Deus Ex. I forgot what the title was, but the latest one, the one that had come out on the 360, so that was kind of nice. I actually always wanted to play it. I just never got around to buying it, so now I threw it in. I installed it and I played just like the first little bit of it, maybe the first mission or so. So that was kind of nice. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I get into trouble because I'm like, I don't want to fire up the 360. I'm just going to go on my web browser and buy and get that game, that free game, from the web store. And what I found was because I had removed my credit card, because when I had purchased a 360 game, it didn't take it against my points, but took it against my credit card. Because I had removed my credit card after that happened, I couldn't get my free game online for the 360. And it was just entirely frustrating. And eventually I ended up just firing up the 360 and I was able to download it no problem. And I didn't even want to download it. I just wanted to buy it for free so it was listed as being owned by me so I could in the future if I ever wanted to download it and play it on the Xbox One. So kind of a it was kind of a nightmare scenario. It just had me shaking my fist at the computer. It's like, why, Microsoft? You can make the game run on the Xbox One, but I can't just check a checkbox and say, yes, I want it. I mean, really, what's harder? Making a game that runs on a 10-year-old console run on a brand new console, or checking a box to say, yes, I want my free game? I don't know. The checkbox seems easier to me, but that's just me.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So for me, yeah. So I will be pretty quick. The only thing I've been playing is I was checking my YouTube channel, which is it's awesome when you stream because you can just go to your channel and check and see what you've been playing. But yeah, I've been playing Forza Motorsport 6. So I put in about 4 hours this weekend, which is great. I was really embarrassed. I went and booted the game up, and you know the thing about Forza, especially 6, is there's tabs all over the place. There's just a cornucopia of data available. And so I went and looked at my profile statistics and saw that I'd only put in like 57 minutes into Forza, which I think came out in like November. And I was like, man, so I bought the Ultimate Edition of Forza, which I think was like $100. It had like the VIP pass, the car pack. And the big thing about the car pack is it's the first 6 months of any car pack that releases, and those monthly car packs are like 7 cars a piece, so it's like 42 extra cars, all sorts of extra content. And I've put like less than an hour into this, so I said, let me do something about this. So like I said, I put 4 hours in, had a blast. And before that, I had been playing Project Cars, which I think I like better than Forza 6, but Forza 6 is still a great game. And I finally figured out, you know, the way the menu runs, they kind of funnel you into playing the 15 different like championship circuits like in a row. But I finally figured out if you go into like the history of motorsports or something like that, that's how you can go in and get back to championships you've already played and race those circuits in different cars. So, you know, I bought a bunch of cars. I had a bunch of extra credits from the Forza Hub. Finally downloaded all my car packs because I realized there were like 3 car packs I hadn't even downloaded. So I downloaded all those and spent some time in like a 1990s like Mitsubishi Eclipse and the Subaru Impreza 22B, I think it is. Raced a little CRX, which was wonderful because I realized this weekend I often say I race with a style that is more oriented for cars that have good oversteer. And where the back kind of slides around. And I've said that before, and I've kind of said it jokingly, like it was a trope, but I realized this weekend it's not a trope. Like I raced that CRX a lot better than like that Impreza with its all-wheel drive. So I just had a blast. I took like 18 clips. I recorded like 2, 3 hours of streaming video. So had a blast. It was really awesome.
That's awesome, man. You ever had a chance to catch up with the car club on Sunday nights?
I'm not. It's just an unfortunate timing. They start up at 8:30. I 3 out of the 4 or 5 weekends of a month, I have a movies podcast that I do with the site that I write for, Geeks Worldwide, and that's a show where the cast has like a lot of very intense dedication to doing movies. We break down movies. We all watch like 2 team movies a month. Where we all watch the same 2 movies, and we break them down in excruciating detail. So that's a can't miss. And then the Sunday nights that I am free, I have to spend some more time with my wife to make sure she doesn't get more and more aggravated at the number of podcasts that I'm on. So unfortunately, no. And Forza, as much as I love it does have that thing. I didn't jump on with them right away. Because Forza, to me, it's one of those that I feel like you have to build up your garage inventory before you go and play multiplayer, so you have like a good stable of cars that you're comfortable with, that you have skins applied to. I don't so much need to tune in every individual one, but I definitely need like, you know, 12 to 24 cars that are like, you know, distinctly mine, so that I'm not out on the track with just the stock, like, you know, paint scheme. So I missed probably the first month, and then, like I said, I wound up being on more and more podcasts. So unfortunately, no.
No, I hear you. I think we all struggle with the free time. Hey, give me an update. Where are you with your, no, I forget the name of it. It's the predecessor to, or the prequel to, Homeworld, but it's a ground-based RTS.
Yeah, I have actually not gotten back around to that. Because I play on so many different systems and so many different styles of games, so I have not gotten back around to that yet. I know Downriver Rat was looking for me to complete the mission that I put the posted the video on into the Casual Adult Gamers site, and I said I was going to divert from my normal game track and get back and complete that just to post the video, but I haven't done that yet.
Well, can you give us your first impression? I mean, you and I, we both played a lot of RTSs. I'm very interested in what you think. I mean, I know you already posted the post and the video, but in a sentence, what's your initial kind of feelings about that game? I mean, it's getting great reviews, but I'd like to know what you think.
I like it. It's not as good as the original Homeworld. I think it's pretty close to Homeworld 2. A lot of the comments I've seen on Steam are people who are saying it's not as great as the original franchise. And I think people think more highly of Homeworld 2 than it was originally reviewed as. It was like a low 80s average score, and this one, the last time I checked, it was like high 70s. So they're pretty close. It's neat. It's great dialogue. What they nail, much like Star Wars Battlefront, is they nail the radio chatter. Like, the radio chatter makes you feel like you're really participating in a true military operation. So, I like it. I haven't been able to get the graphics cranked up all the way. I think there was an NVIDIA drivers problem when it first released, where the drivers weren't optimized. Because when you go and look at screenshots, it looks way more gorgeous than I've been able to get it to run. But I reckon I'll eventually figure that out. But it's solid. And unlike most RTSs, I'm actually interested in playing the campaign mode on this one, which I normally don't do. I normally play like the first 4 or 5 missions, and then I'm off to skirmish mode. Because I feel like the campaign missions in an RTS are so contrived and arbitrary. But this one, because of the heavy story behind it, I really enjoy.
Well, good. Thank you, man. Thank you for that update. I like Rat and like yourself, I went and picked up the Homeworld Remastered, but I haven't really played much of it. So I gotta myself get back to that. But I'm gonna go ahead and segue right into segment two, where we talk about the gaming news of the week. And I'm gonna be honest with everybody. I've been working a lot. I haven't been following the gaming news. So I'm going to rely on my two friends here, Osiris Prime and Zeus, to kind of talk about, hey, what was interesting in the gaming news of the week? And we'll kick it back to Osiris Prime first. So Prime, what have you been hearing in the news? What's been interesting?
So I got a few stories here that were kind of interesting that I saw this week, and kind of on a broader spectrum here, different systems and stuff like that. So first up, a little Nintendo news. So I know I don't know if Gray you have it, but I believe DB had Splatoon, and they had recently released the last DLC content for that last month in January, which I believe was just like a map, another map, the last map for that game. But during a recent tournament, a Splatoon tournament, they were talking with the game producer, and I'm probably going to butcher his name here, but I'll try to say it anyways. Hososhi Nagami, I believe is how you say it. He kind of was just kind of briefly talking about how, the DLC had ended last month, but they're starting to think, maybe they can, throw some more things out there. And that was pretty much it. It was kind of cryptic. He didn't really say too much about it. And this is from Destructoid.com that I got this news article. And they're also saying that there was rumors that there's another or some new amiibos that might be coming out for Splatoon. So might kind of make sense if they're gonna release some more DLC maybe down the line or some other kind of content. So that'd be cool. I haven't played this myself, but it's something definitely I'll probably pick up in the future. Just trying to add to my collection of Wii U games, which I don't have too many. And actually, my wife and kid were they were kind of had some interest in it when they've seen it in the stores, so I'll probably pick it up one day. Like I said, I don't think either of you have it, correct?
No, I don't have it, but it looks cool.
Yes, definitely. So, and then the next couple items are actually some E3 news items. We've had a confirmation that Bethesda is going to be having a conference again this year at E3, which is kind of cool, I guess. And
What?
kind of, exactly. So no Fallout news, at least as far as we know yet. It was a Polygon article. They didn't really, state too much other than the days. So it's going to be Sunday, June 12th at 7 o'clock Pacific time. So I believe that's when they did it last time. They were kind of the first ones to kick it off. And then the only other thing that they had from the company is just kind of a, I guess a kind of a caricature of like Fallout people and or Fallout characters and Doom and Dishonored. So, and that's pretty much it. They didn't really, confirm what games are going to be there. But I know, obviously, Doom, the new Doom's supposed to be coming out. I'm assuming sometime this year, and that they're supposed to, that they had announced Dishonored 2 last year, I believe. So there hasn't been too much of that released yet, I don't think. So maybe we'll get, a release date if it hasn't come out yet. Maybe some Fallout 4 news. I don't think there's been any DLC yet for it. So, and I know the Xbox One version, I don't think has the mod support yet that has started up yet for that. So maybe they'll kind of drop some of that if it hasn't come out already. So it'd be interesting. Maybe they're speculating, maybe an Elder Scrolls announcement. That'd be very cool for me, at least, because I've always been an Elder Scrolls guy. So that'd be very awesome if they at least, announce something. I'm sure there probably won't be anything out this year, but, at least, something to whet our appetites. Other than that, it was pretty much it for that story. They didn't really, like I said, there was really nothing else that they could think of that, might be coming out from them. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think it'll be worthwhile for them to do another conference?
I thought I'm kind of surprised because they had said that they probably wouldn't do another one, that the timing was just right with Fallout 4 and everything that was going on, Doom and all that, So I'm surprised they're doing another one. I think it's cool. And I'm hoping for Skyrim remastered with co-op on the Xbox One. What do you think? What do you think? No?
Oh, I definitely love that. I'd even take just like a backwards compatibility if they can, bring the, 360 version up to the one. I'd definitely jump back into it and play another. I think I did like 220 something hours on, on the 360.
Well, I get a sneaking suspicion that a lot of companies are saying, oh, no, we're already working on a remastered edition, so we're not going to support backwards compatibility because then nobody will buy a remastered edition. So maybe I'm wrong, but I'm hoping I would buy it. Skyrim remastered for the Xbox One with four-player co-op. Count me in. I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'd jump on that too, actually, if they did a remaster. Yeah, I don't know how the, I guess they could always just ramp up the difficulty and, the enemy count to, compensate for, the extra, 2 to 3 players, so that'd be cool. All right, so the next, the E3 announcement. EA, excuse me, I was going to say E3. EA, of all the companies out there, is actually not going to have a conference or a big presence, I guess, at the show. They're actually going to do their own thing, kind of parallel with E3. It's called EA Play, and it's going to be at the LA Convention Center, so right across the street from the expo, where E3 is being held. And they're just going to basically just have like games that you could play. And I don't know, think they actually said if they're going to have any kind of conference or not, but they're just going to have a setup of games and stuff, so you can play it and test. And I guess they're having a another event in London at the same time, just having everything out there to play and to look at. They are going to, I guess, still have a presence, is what they're saying, at the first party conferences, like Sony and Microsoft, and maybe Nintendo. I don't know. I doubt it, but unless they're part of some NX, the console launch or something. But so they'll probably still, show up there and, show off their games, but, just they won't have a regular, EA conference at the E3 Expo. So I thought that was kind of interesting and kind of weird at the same time, I guess, because they're always, they had the one of the biggest displays, I think, there was what I usually read. And, they always had their big conference, I think they're usually like third or fourth, maybe, out of the gate. So I just thought that was interesting. Although, you know, in past years, I think I mentioned this too last year in our podcast, that they were kind of the driest of the conferences. They're just kind of dull, and, you know, there wasn't really, you know, much other conferences. So I don't know what you guys thought about that.
What do you, I mean, come on. That half an hour interview with Pelé was just riveting for everybody who loves soccer. I think it's, I don't know what to say. It's risky, but it could pay off. I mean, they're so big that if they can just do something across the street, all the press that goes to E3 can just go across the street and see EA. I mean, it'll be very interesting, risky, but it could pay off. I mean, they could get much more bang for their buck by doing it down the street from E3. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of this trend. And this started a few years ago with Apple. Yeah, I mean, you know, Apple has been the king of this style. You know, when they started backing out of CES and even Macworld Expo, you know, just wanting to kind of have time in the limelight to themselves. And then other marketing teams started kind of glomming onto this. You know, Samsung does it now, and whatnot in the technology space. And I get it. I mean, I understand why it's important for companies. They don't want to get lost in the noise. Nintendo, you know, started doing this in the gaming space. But I mean, my thing is, you know, for somebody who tracks the news and writes about the stuff, it's like every other week, like another manufacturer has to have their own thing. And you know, while it's neat that Apple does it in the way they do it, there are a few things more disappointing than like a standalone Apple event where they don't announce anything I find interesting. And so this arms race of like standalone press conferences just gets a little overwhelming. And you know, and the thing is my thing is, you know, just do your thing at the consolidated show where everybody's doing it. And if you don't have news that's interesting, I'm not going to fail to find it uninteresting just because you're glommed in with a bunch of people. I would still be just as disinterested if you were doing it on your own. So I would just rather have the stuff go back to being, you know, in these consolidated shows and, you know, let the cream of the crop rise to the top, so to speak. You know, but I don't know. I guess they're going to do it regardless. Yeah. So,
you know, I just say, though, that this show is only for the press, right? It's not like a public show, like CES, there's public days, right? So because it's press only, and because EA is so big, the press is definitely going to go check out EA. They'd be remiss not to. So, you know, if they just have their own press conference, I mean, most of the press conferences aren't at the location that the E3 trade show's at, right? So they could have a press conference and have their own show floor. And it would, to me, to the consumer, there would be no difference because I know the journalists are going to cover it. I don't know.
Yeah, they do state that they're still, I guess they're going to do private meetings at the E3, which obviously it's just with the press, so probably showing like, you know, their biggest games. So I don't know. They don't really go into detail what exactly is going to entail in the EA Play event, but that just that it's going to be, you know, going on around at the same time as E3. So I don't know if they're going to have like a whole press conference or if, like I said, if they're just going to have games that you can play and, you know, just kind of show off. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they're actually going to do and, you know, how it's going to pan out. And if they actually try to compete maybe with the other conferences when they're going on, you know, by, you know, totally, you know, showing off all their stuff. And that might kind of work against them if, because obviously all the news sites and everything is going to, you know, want to be at the, you know, the big conferences and not, you know, just the EA little thing at the, you know, on the side. So it'll be interesting.
And my thing is, I like EA. I mean, I play their games. I don't, you know, I'm not a huge fan of their business practices, but yeah, you know, I play their games and sometimes I get to them late because, you know, they're a big corporation and they do some kind of shady stuff sometimes, but eventually I probably give them my money anyway. But to be quite honest, I mean, do they really need their own standalone show so that they can show the next iteration of Need for Speed, and the next iteration of Madden, and the next iteration of a BioWare game, and the next, you know what I mean? I mean, they're a total sequelitis company, and, you know, in years, some gamers or pockets of gamers have railed about, you know, a whole show that's, you know, or when an E3 is nothing but sequels. But I mean, I'll admit, that's what I find exciting. You know, that's the easiest thing to pick out when you scroll down a list of game releases. Your eyes lock in on the, oh, it's the next blah, blah, blah. It's just interesting that they would set aside, you know, parse themselves out to their own show to show, you know, 80, 90% of their content being, you know, the next iteration of a given game franchise. I'm just not really sure that that's actually necessary.
No, I hear what you're saying, but if you flip it around, right, if they can get that entire show floor to themselves for the same price of what a small location inside the E3 would be, what's the downside of going across the street? It's all the press are going to come there, and they'll just get more. They'll have the full attention of the press, whereas when the press is at their booth on the E3 show floor, you get everything going around. You get people right across from them making lots of noise, and we've all heard the stories of how each booth tries to make more noise than the other to get everybody's attention. I don't know. I mean, if it was open to the public, I would say, yeah, this could really be a bad choice, but since it's only open to the press, they may actually get more floor space for the same price, and actually get the reporters may actually get more one-on-one time. It'll be interesting. It could be a flop, but it could be a coup. I don't know.
I completely agree. It makes complete and total business sense. I cannot argue against that. But yeah, it makes complete sense for them. It's just you know, yet another press conference for me to put on my calendar.
Yeah, I mean, since this is the first year they're doing it, you know, it'll probably draw, you know, a pretty good crowd just because, you know, it's the first time that they're doing something like this. So they'll probably be pretty okay this time around, but, you know, second or third time, you know, third year that they try to do this might be where it kind of, you know, starts to go downhill, so to speak.
Well, you know what it's going to be. I mean, I expect the same thing to happen that happened in the technology spaces. All the big publishers, you know, a year from now, all the big publishers will be in their own standalone conferences. So, you know, I'm sure everybody's going to follow EA down the chute. So next year we'll have the EA event, the Activision event, the Bethesda event. Well, I guess Bethesda, didn't Bethesda already kind of do this last year? Or what? There was some, I think when they did Fallout, wasn't that like its own thing?
No, I think that was just during the regular press event. Unless they had something separate afterwards or before that. But as far as I remember, you know, they had pretty much that same time, like I said earlier, that they're going to do it on a Sunday night to do, you know, all the games. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They did the let's get E3 started early, and showed, I think, Fallout 4 like the night before the official start. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think, you know, Fallout was pretty much a big part of that, since obviously it hadn't come out yet. They were doing a lot of the announcements and everything, you know, all about the, you know, the modding and everything like that, and you know, just kind of how the game worked. So yeah, they kind of kicked it off. All right, so last news item for me, a little bit of PC news. GOG.com, or Good Old Games, are going to be releasing a early access, I guess, on Steam, and or game preview, as it's called on Xbox One. Segment on their site, where basically they're going to be, you know, releasing for sale games that aren't complete yet. So I know there's a bunch of actually Ark on the PC that kind of started out that way, and still's in kind of the early access, and a lot of the survival games kind of start out that way. But you know, all genre games, you know, basically in the early development of their cycle, they're going to be releasing for sale on Good Old Games. And a couple of, I guess, differences compared to Steam, or they didn't really mention the game preview from Xbox, but it's pretty much the same thing. That the site's going to be doing is they're going to handpick only the games that they truly stand behind, which I guess that's good. I mean, I guess that's their opinion, but I guess Steam's kind of, and I don't use Steam too much, and maybe you guys can tell me a little bit better for as far as their early access, but I don't know if it's more of a, you know, kind of the Wild West, that kind of everything's thrown on Steam early access.
Yeah, I'm glad you use the term Wild West, because that's the one I was going to reach for. It's a complete I don't want to say trash heap, but it's definitely an early access boneyard. I mean, like anything and everything gets put up. Anything and everything gets put up for early access. There's no, I don't want to say quality control, but I don't know that there's any type of gate, that you have to pass, a check of, like 10 different requirements or whatever. There's tons of stuff up there for early access. It's very difficult to weed through the chaff to find something really valuable. And the prices are frequently very high. The prices are frequently higher for an early access game than just buying it at retail once it's available. So I've never done it on Steam, but I'm excited to see GOG's take on it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I figured they'd be less expensive on Steam. So they're going to handpick, the games they think look promising and, are highly regarded by the community wish list. So we'll see how that pans out. And then the other difference, which I actually thought Steam already had this, was they have a 14-day return policy. So no questions asked, according to this article. So, whatever the reason, if you say you don't want it anymore, you can, go back and get a refund. So, like I said, I thought Steam had a refund program, unless that's not for early access, if that's just for the regular games.
I think that's right. I don't think there's a refund on early access games, but there might be. I'm not sure. But the big thing is, and I think I talked about this on the podcast before. I wrote an article. Maybe you weren't on that one. I wrote an article a couple months ago when I bought NBA 2K16 called "Why I'm Never Buying Another Game from Steam Again," and that's because their refund policy is basically horrible. It's a 2-hour cap on game time because, of course, Steam is tracking your play time, and I think it's 14 days. It might be 10 days. I'm not certain, but the big thing is that arbitrary 2-hour cap. And obviously, somebody who buys an early access game is probably going to want to play more than 2 hours. That's kind of the point. But good old games. Is pretty awesome. It's you play a game for less than 14 days, you don't like it, you get a refund. And when I wrote that article, I got involved in several arguments of people who were just Steam evangelists, and I think the argument that kind of torqued me off the most was somebody who said, two people who said that, no retail store in the history of PC games has accepted refunds, and I'm like, I'm guessing you guys are young and you just haven't been around that long, because absolutely, like in the early 2000s, if you walked in and bought a PC game from a GameStop or Babbage's or Software Etc. or whatever back in those days, you could absolutely bring that game back and get store credit. So it's nice to see good old games kind of honoring that legacy in terms of how they've baked their refund policy.
Yeah, those kind of policies too, they always evolve. Obviously, eventually they kind of figured out that, these PC games can be copied and, we're kind of getting screwed. So they kind of, put a limit on that, the return policy there too. And, same thing could be said for anything you buy off of, something digital. They got to kind of evolve with the times, if you don't like something or if something's just broken, you have to be able to return it. So it just kind of works out that way. And then also another thing they mentioned here is through the GOG Galaxy client, which I'm assuming is just the installer and how you get all your games, that you're going to actually be able to control the updates and even roll back updates if something causes a problem. You can just uninstall it and you're back in business. So I thought that was kind of cool. That's a neat new feature that's, I think, sorely missed in a lot of software, not just gaming software, but other software. You can just roll back easily instead of have to search through a bunch of stuff to try to get rid of that update. So I thought that was cool too. They did have a short list here of games that'll be available. So Starbound, Ashes of the Singularity, Project Zomboid, Terratech, and The Curious Expedition, and I've only ever heard of Starbound out of all those games. I don't know if you've heard of any of those other games, either of you.
No, I haven't, and that's the one kind of risky area. You know, unfortunately, GOG, because they're a much smaller player than Steam, tends to not get the availability of games that Steam does. So I hope that this initiative actually encourages more developers and publishers to put their games on GOG, so they can be a little more competitive. But by the same token, I don't want them to get so competitive that they just start to behave exactly like Valve. So I'm hoping they're still kind of the gamer store for buying PC games while also getting some more uptake from the publishers and devs.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure this out here. So good old games, the sauce for old games that are DRM free is now going to have new games. No, I think it's great. Right, competition is great, but I just didn't expect new games to be on GOG. Cool.
Yeah, and they do get a healthy amount of new games, but they tend to be only like the really big title. Like, The Witcher is on there, Pillars of Eternity is on there. So they do tend to get bigger games. They tend to typically be your strategy games and your RPGs. They don't have a huge stock of like racing games and first person shooters, So like I said, I'm hoping that this helps with the uptake and the availability of kind of premier title.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when you guys are talking. I was kind of thinking how, you know, kind of back in the day when obviously when first Steam was first coming out, you know, it was, you know, the go-to and, you know, the end-all be-all. And, you know, everybody was always talking about it. And now it's I don't hear, I guess, a ton of bad feedback about it, but I do, you know, hear a lot more than I used to or at all, actually, you know, kind of negative, you know, stuff about Steam. Even some of the guys that I used to work with, you know, I always thought Steam was, you know, pretty good program and nice place to go and, you know, buy games. And, you know, people started, you know, saying, oh, Steam, I hate that. You know, I hate the client. I can't do anything. You know, I have problems with it. And I was just like, oh, okay. It's kind of weird. And so I guess this is kind of just reminds me, God kind of reminds me of, you know, that kind of early Steam and, you know, the client and everything. Just hopefully, you know, they can keep on track and not get, you know, obviously they want to get big, but, you know, hopefully they can just kind of keep it together. So that's all I had this week.
How about you, Zeus?
Yeah, I'll run it down, and again, I'll try and be quick. So I'm going to start off with two kind of sales-oriented news stories that I found most interesting since we last talked. Number one, there was this one story that the EA apparently kind of mistakenly kind of ghosted the lifetime sales numbers of the PlayStation, of the Xbox One, because Microsoft has been very recalcitrant in releasing any indication of what the sales figures are for the Xbox One, because they know that they're behind PS4. Right now, it kind of looks like the PS4, not kind of, we know how many units of PS4 have sold, about 37.7 million, or about 38 million, and Xbox One sits at about 19. So that puts the grand total number of units at about 57 million total. What makes that particularly interesting is not so much those standalone sales numbers, but the fact that just before that dropped, there was an article posted up on VG Charts that talks about the leading wedge of total sales of Xbox One and PlayStation 4 combined in comparison to the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 at the 26-month point. So I think this article came out earlier in the month, but basically, there have been about 20 million more PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones sold versus PlayStation 3s and Xbox 360s combined at this point in the generation life cycle. And I think when they did that, they picked the starting point for the Gen 7 consoles as when the PlayStation 3 launched, because of course the 360 had a 1-year head start. So there we are, about 57 million consoles sold total in Gen 8, which is about 20 million more than Gen 7 sold, which also means that that despite the fact that the Xbox One is behind, that the Xbox One has sold almost the same number of consoles as the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 had combined at this point in its life cycle.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. I kind of I saw that earlier, or I think a few days ago, but I was kind of just going through it really quick, and I just didn't realize that they had, they're doing that well. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot more gamers now, and you would think that mathematically it might make sense that the growth would be exponential from generation to generation, because if a 19-year-old kid got a PS4, or even let's say a 20-something, right out of college, making their own money, bought a PlayStation 3 and an Xbox 360 in Gen 7, that 7 to 10 years later, 10 years later, they're buying both again, and maybe they're having kids at this point, and the numbers just propagate. The other thing I thought was maybe in Gen 7 you had the whole rhetoric around, hey, don't buy a PlayStation 3 because it's ridiculously expensive at $599. Buy an Xbox One and a Wii. And I also thought that, well, maybe what's going on in Gen 8 is that because the Xbox One and PS4 are more reasonably priced, now that the Xbox One has dropped the Kinect, that you could buy a PS4 and an Xbox One for roughly the same amount that you would have paid in Gen 7 for an Xbox One and a Wii.
That's really interesting. I'm just looking at it. I don't understand what's going on. I do think there's been some acceleration. I think when the 360 and PS3 came out, I think they were mostly for older gamers. I think a lot of the younger gamers got a Wii. And now I would guess that a lot of these Xbox Ones and PS4s are filling in that Wii gap. That a lot of the younger kids are wanting to play Call of Duty because their older brothers or parents had played it, and now they want to play, and they're a little bit younger than maybe last gen they would have got to play. But I'm just guessing. I don't know.
Yeah, the other thing, man, I had that thought and now it just completely escaped me.
You're welcome.
Well, I'll go ahead and roll, and hopefully I'll remember that thought because I'd latched onto something, and now it's gone. So the other interesting thing that happened is the PlayStation organization, I guess on the strength of their 37.7 million units sold, has been broken off from Sony corporate. So they are now their own standalone business unit, rather than being part of the main hierarchy of EA, I'm sorry, of Sony Corp. I found this particularly interesting because in the last couple years, definitely since the PS4 launch, so definitely 2014 or 15, I think, there was one of those years that I actually sat on the earnings call, and that division, at least one year, it was the year that 3D TVs had gone big. So whatever year, so in January at CES that year, 3D TVs had been huge, and by the time the books closed on the end of that year, Sony and the rest of the industry had learned the unfortunate lesson that going big on 3D TVs was not a good investment, because they didn't sell that well. Sales on those TVs rapidly tapered off, and Sony, was looking at getting rid of their cell phone division, and they did get rid of they shaved off part of their TV division, and they did get rid of their VAIO computer laptop division. The other thing they did that year was they took Sony Network Services and rolled them in to the organization that owns the PlayStation. So those services and that business unit have been broken off, and now they are called Sony Interactive Entertainment, whereas they had formerly been called Sony Computer Entertainment. So the hardware guys with PlayStation, the network services group for games, and all of the first party studios have been broken off into their own division. And if listeners are looking for an analog of like why that's a big deal or what that sounds like, that would kind of be like the Xbox division being broken off and being its own company and not part of Microsoft corporate.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, they're doing so well. Why be weighed down by the woes of big screen TVs and stereos, right? Sony's a great company. I mean, they own so much, but yeah, sometimes it makes sense to break them off. I think this is a good move. It can only make the PlayStation better.
So now they don't have any affiliation with Sony anymore? Well, with the parent company?
They do, but the big thing is the big difference is now you will be able to buy stock in Sony Interactive Entertainment. They will have their own earnings ledger. All their accounting will be as a standalone company, and it won't all be. The big difference is that year that I talked about, they rolled up network services. They were able to. They didn't necessarily have to report on a divisional basis, and so you could they could bury a lot of debt and loss just in big rolled up corporate numbers where it wouldn't be transparent to competitors and whatnot, which divisions were doing poorly.
Yeah, and that's pretty common too when you do that. So I think PlayStation has kind of been hiding some of the issues in the other Sony business units. And so breaking it out, lets the PlayStation division, or whatever they call it, Sony Interactive Entertainment division, have its day in the sun and really put heat on the other business units to perform because they can no longer hide. Kind of almost the reverse of what the Xbox was for Microsoft, where the Xbox lost money for the for Microsoft, but they were able to fund it anyways. I'm talking about the original Xbox because Microsoft just had a gobs of money, and so breaking it off is it makes a lot of sense. And if you're that profitable and you're going strong, I mean, if we look at the history of the PlayStation, there was only one model that struggled. The PlayStation 1 was phenomenally successful. The PlayStation 2 was phenomenally successful. The PlayStation 3, because of that cell processor that was going to do everything, and then at the last minute they had to throw in a graphics card because nobody could get the power out of that processor to make it do the graphics, and thus by adding a graphics card made the thing wicked expensive. That was the only really that was the model that really that struggled, but PlayStation 4 is back to where the 1 and 2 was, and kudos to them.
And I did remember the point I was going to make about the combined sales numbers is another big difference in this generation is supply. So the PlayStation people can't buy products in large numbers that are not sitting on store shelves, and the PlayStation 3 in particular, the resource constraint. The comparison of demand versus supply with that console was hugely lopsided. I mean, it took me months to track, and the PlayStation 2 was as well. It took me a while to track down a PlayStation 3, and at the end of the day, I ordered one like on eBay on the night of Thanksgiving when I suspected that most of the country wasn't looking for the scarce numbers of units available, and paid probably like $50 more than retail, because I bought it in like a bundle, but I think both Microsoft and Sony did a much better job anticipating supply this time around, and so part of the thing that's lending to the sale of these units is increased supply, and they're all using common PC components versus last gen, where especially the PlayStation 3 was all like custom built and custom engineered components designed by Sony and then fabbed by larger ODMs.
Yeah, I think both companies felt the pain of that. Microsoft had all the red ring issues with their components, and then Sony had the supply issue and difficult to program for issue by doing that super chip. So no, I mean it's great. I mean if you look at what's actually in a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One, it's a lot of similarities in components. Really, really, truly are.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll mention, I will not cover it. Details dropped in the last week about the Star Wars Battlefront Season Pass and lots of the DLC coming out. I'm not only not going to cover it because we're pressed for time. I'm also not going to cover it because if you can figure out this stinking menagerie of Byzantine like rollout of this content, go for it and please tell us because I cannot understand. Like it's. Stuff is dropping in different months, and it's costumes, but then maps, and I like. Eh. I mean, if you bought a season pass, I guess you don't care because you're just going to get everything. But if you didn't buy a season pass, like some of it's free at one point, but then some of it becomes free later, and like it's just a mess.
Well, you answered my question. I'm getting more free stuff. That's all I care about. I love the game. I kind of miss playing the game with the guys. We were doing Wednesday nights. It was a blast. Yeah, I'm looking forward to more free stuff. I did not buy the season pass, but I think that's a game I'll be playing for quite some time.
No comment. I don't have the game.
Well, with that, let's roll into our next segment. And so, what are we going to talk about next, guys?
Want to just do your games you're looking forward to for 2016? We can save the streaming stuff maybe for next time.
Okay, so Skyrim remastered for the Xbox One, four-player co-op. All right, so that's not coming out. But I think the biggest game I want—I know you guys did yours last week, so I'll just throw this out there. The biggest game I'm looking forward to. Now, granted, I know nothing about the next Call of Duty. I know nothing about the next Battlefield. Or really, I mean, it sounds like the Destiny 2 is going to get pushed back. I mean, I could get excited about that, but I know nothing about that. I'll tell you, the one game I'm really excited about that's really been talked about is No Man's Sky. That looks just like a lot of fun. I'll probably be getting it on the PC, and that's the one I'm looking forward to. Just being able to go to planets and explore, kind of almost like in a Minecraft fashion, but with really good graphics, and take my ship and see battles going on and maybe help people who need help. And I don't know, it seems like fun. It seems like a great way to waste some time. Maybe when my wife's watching a show I'm not into, I can just fire that up and play. Besides that, a lot of people are getting me excited about The Division. I was initially excited about it, and then I'm not so excited about it. Now, it all has to do with my friends. If a lot of my friends get it, then I'll definitely be putting that on my list. But yeah, those are the. I'm sure there's other games. I'm sure there's some of the games you guys talked about last week that I should probably be looking at. But my big one is No Man's Sky, really is. And then who knows? I got every Battlefield game ever made, so I'll probably get the Battlefield game, and it may even get the Call of Duty game. Who knows? But that's it. Am I crazy? What do you think, guys?
I actually forgot about No Man's Sky. It's probably because I don't have a PS4, but I don't know if my current PC would be able to take that, be able to run it or not. But yeah, I definitely, if I ever get probably a PS4, I definitely want to, pick that game up. Or if by some chance if it ever comes out for the Xbox One, I still think to this day they haven't really said either way if it is going to come to the Xbox One. I think they kind of just skirt around that question usually when it's asked. But yeah, I definitely would like to play that one day. It does look pretty cool, procedurally generated worlds and planets and universe, I guess, galaxies. You could just get lost forever in that game. So yeah, that's should be good.
Ooh, I just thought of another one. Sorry. But as you were talking about No Man's Sky, I thought if I could afford VR, I'd want to get like VR, like any VR system. I would love to get a space combat game, whether it's Squadron 42 and or if it was like Eve Valkyrie. I just think a space sim in VR would be like the best. But especially since I'm hooked on space opera novels, I've been reading a lot of them as part of Kindle Unlimited, and I think I would just love that to have VR and to do a space sim. But yeah, so I just wanted to throw that back in there.
Yeah, I'm hoping Elite Dangerous will be the poster child for that.
Sweet. I mean, you got Eve, you got Elite Dangerous, you got yes, now I'm having a senior moment here. Squadron 42 is Chris Roberts, Roberts Industries. What's the name of his game?
Oh, is that the mod or expansion pack or whatever? It's a Star Citizen?
Star Citizen, that's what I was trying to think of. Yeah, so you have Star Citizen, you have Eve Valkyrie or Eve, you have Elite Dangerous. So all of these new next-gen space simulator games, they all look cool, and I think they'd all be pretty awesome inside of VR.
Yeah, so let me ask you, Greg, because you brought up Battlefield, and I'm having a really difficult time parsing the statements from EA during its investors call. So we know that there is a new Battlefield experience, is what they're calling it, as well as a sequel to Titanfall and Mass Effect, which are supposed to drop in 2017. Now, all of those games are professed by EA to be arriving somewhere in Q1 of 2017. A little bit beyond Q1, they say April 2017, which is actually the beginning of Q2, depending on how their fiscal years align. It seems like this must inherently mean that there is not a Battlefield coming in 2016. Because I can't see them doing a Battlefield in the big holiday season of 2016 and then dropping an entirely new Battlefield model framework of a game in Q1 / the first month of Q2 of 2017.
You know, that's a good point because, I mean, look, what did we have last year? We had Battlefield, was it Hardline? And then we had this year. Yeah, so that got pushed, right? That was originally, I think, you know, slated for holiday and got pushed, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. And then we had Battlefront. So you got to imagine that holiday 2016, there's another Battlefield, but maybe it will get pushed. I mean, I kind of look at Battlefield 4 as kind of like Forza 5. It's the addition that a lot of people didn't play. And even the diehards that played it said, it was so-so. And so that sets them up for their Forza 6 or the next Battlefield 3 that should be awesome, right? Battlefield 5. So, but it would be disappointing if that didn't come out holiday. Mass Effect and Battlefield, I think that's two different groups of people you're going after there. I don't think they... I have not played nearly as much Mass Effect as I have Battlefield, probably 100-1. So to push it off, why would you... What other game? A new Titanfall game for sure, but I would have thought that would have been a September type of game.
Yeah, I still think that Titanfall would do better if it was, like, you know, earlier in the year, you know, or obviously in 2017, you know, if it was, like, February or something like that, or March maybe. I don't know if it's a big enough name to throw in the holiday, unless it's like all by itself. Obviously there's Call of Duty and, you know, all those other games. I mean, all by itself from other EA games. So I don't know if that'd be a smart move to drop that during the holiday season. But I don't know. It'd be pretty crowded to have. I know they're different games, you know, Mass Effect and Battlefield, but they're still, you know, there's probably some cross-play. You know, people play both, so. I don't know if it's going to be a majority, but, you know, it's a good number of people that probably play both, and you don't want to have a situation kind of like this past season with Fallout 4 and Tomb Raider, which obviously Tomb Raider was only on one system, so it was kind of handicapped a little in that regards too. But you know, hopefully, you know, they kind of spread everything out so everything's not dropping, you know, within a month or so of each other.
You know, I think Titanfall 2 could be awesome with a great single-player campaign. I mean, I've played, I know there's not a lot of them out there, but if you ever play a good single-player mech campaign, it's just a lot of fun. And I think if they could, and they were so close in Titanfall 1 to having a good single-player campaign. You know, and you're right, it'd probably dominate if it came out in the spring. But why move Battlefield to the spring? Very weird.
I'm wondering if those games are VR enabled, and if in order to get that in, that team needs another 3 or 4 months of development, and that's why it's getting pushed to the right. Kind of like what happens with a movie when it's not shot in 3D, and at the last minute they decide, oh, it needs to release in 3D, so they have to go back and kind of... you know, kind of make it 3D after the fact. I wonder if kind of VR is having that same impact.
Yeah, it could. I don't know if I'd want to play my Battlefield in VR without one of those, run-in-place kind of, you know, augmented reality type of stands, you know, because, I don't see that as being good unless I can run around and jump.
I can see maybe Titanfall. That'd be kind of cool. You know, you're in the mech and kind of, you know, running around. Although I guess it'd be kind of disorienting once you pop out of the mech and you're, you know, first person, you know, just regular human kind of going, jumping around stuff. So that might be kind of weird.
Well, yeah, and that's why I think, yeah, so just like if you're in the mech or you're in the spaceship or you're in the cockpit of the car, you expect to be sitting and for everything to be moving around you, which makes a lot of sense. So as long as if you didn't get out of the mech, yeah, it would make a lot of sense for VR. But Battlefield, I mean, if you're in a tank or in a jeep, That would make sense, but running around on foot is a big part of Battlefield, and I don't know. It maybe it's wicked cool. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a big part, especially when all the vehicles are gone when you spawn in. Then you have to run.
That's my luck, yeah.
So cool. Yeah, those sound like some good picks for your 2016. Hopefully, we'll see, the rise of all those games coming out this year. I guess what No Man's Sky is supposed to come out this spring, I think, around June or something like that, or maybe early summer.
I don't even know what the release date is. I didn't hear it announced. It probably has, but I've been so busy at work. But hopefully it launches on the PC same time as PS4. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I think they had like a launch, like a window. They just had like a month or something. I can't remember exactly what month it was, but I don't think they had nailed down the date totally yet.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Well, guys, I'm looking at the time. I think it's probably time for us to wrap up the show. Any final thoughts there, Prime?
Nope, nothing right now.
How about you, Zeus? Any final thoughts?
Please go check out my YouTube channel, Rounding Off Infinity, and feel free to wade through what I hope is appearing to be a large archive of very eclectic games. So, other than racing, there's a big racing component of that archive, but there's lots of other stuff that's kind of all over the place and in different directions for you to peruse.
Yeah, highly recommend checking out Zeus's videos. Very, very good stuff there. You can also catch up with Prime on YouTube, where he is Tao Master 99, Tao Master 99, and you can also find him on Twitch as Osiris underscore Prime. Our good friend DBQ Hams, who've missed both of the last two. I only missed one, but DBQ Hams has missed two of the last two podcasts. You can find him on Twitch at, maybe he's on there right now playing. Is he blowing us off? Somebody go check. You can find DBQ Hams on Twitch at,
It's
and
probably
his
playing the
name is,
division. It's
oh, that's right. It's a timed beta, right? Dang
they
you,
extended,
DB.
yeah, they extended actually the beta, I think, till today.
That's it. That's why he blew us off. I knew it, DB. I knew it. If I were in your shoes, I would have done the same thing. So you can find DB, who's probably playing the Division Beta right now on Twitch. He is DBQ Hams there, just like we call him here. And you can find me, well, you probably won't find me on Twitch because I've just been too busy. So I'm not going to tell you my Twitch handle or my YouTube handle. But I will say this. On behalf of myself, Osiris Prime, and Zeus Adamus, I want to thank you for listening to our podcast this week. And, if you have any comments, thoughts, or opinions, share them with us. Drop us an email. Post a comment in our forum or on our blog. You know the address, bandofgamers.net or podcast at bandofgamers.net if you want to email us. But until next week's show, this is Greylock3491 signing off for the team. And until next time, peace. Thank you.